This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Hey, you listen to Wrestling Roundup on Free FM, RFM, and MP. As always, I'm Grady, and live on Discord, we got Josh.
Hey.
Raw SmackDown, and I want to actually start with a little bit of NXT. We don't get to talk about it too often, because by the time we record the show at the moment, at lunchtime in New Zealand, NXT hasn't quite happened yet, but something happened last week I want to talk about, and that is that we got a new Women's North American champion.
What a difference that a year makes. We had Zarya and Sol Ruka together as a tag team. We were wondering, are they going to break up? When are they going to break up? When is things going to explode? And in the very quick time after the explosion, we now have a new Intercontinental champion and a new North American champion.
It's interesting, right, because they've both probably got a claim to such and such was holding me back. As soon as the tag team implodes, they both immediately see success and championships around their waists.
It's fun. It's fun. Zarya's very talented, so it's good to see her get her moment there. It's just unfortunately for her, it's a little outshaded by the fact that Sol Ruka gained the Intercontinental Championship not more than 2 weeks before her, and was done on a premium live event.
Yeah, it feels like, and it's one of those things where you can seed but never use, right? We've got the seeds when Zarya does get called up. If you want to completely reignite that, with the "you outshined my moment," the "you held me back as soon as you were gone, I got the championship," there's a lot of parallel storytelling, even though they're on different brands now, that you could pick right back up if you want to run that story on the main roster. Something with the old champion, Tatum Paxley, we always, her runs may not have been long. We were kind of hoping for a good, nice long run. Are you happy with the run that Tatum had with the North American Championship?
Yeah, she was fine. I mean, I didn't expect a really long reign, mm-hmm. be 100% honest. But she's gotten two reigns. She's gotten to do, So I think she's in a position where she's actually, I think, maybe ready for a post-SummerSlam call-up.
Yeah, I think NXT's in that period of rebuild, right? We've got Tony D'Angelo sitting at the top, but we do have a couple of newcomers in Evil, haven't gotten used to his new name yet, and Mason Rook coming up, challenging him, Darkstater trying to break out. Even in the women's division, we got a few people trying to sort of rebuild that division. So it would be a bit of a loss to lose another one in Tatum Paxley, but she's kind of done what she's going to do in NXT. I wouldn't be shocked. As you said, maybe she heads up after SummerSlam or in the latter half of the year. Jumping over to SmackDown. You know what? I'm going to talk a bunch of folks who were on NXT not too long ago. Trick Williams, Carmelo Hayes, Ricky Saints. I'm going to ignore Lil Yachty. We predicted Carmelo Trick. That's the big money match. Ricky Saints poking his nose in there. I guess what combination of that do you expect us to get?
I think the SummerSlam match is going to be Trick versus Carmelo.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Night of Champions match will be Ricky Saints, because I think the bigger money match is Carmelo versus Trick. and it needs to be at a bigger stage.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I think they're both good matches, and they are both matches that I would want to see, but you can't ignore the history that Trick and Carmelo have, the bangers they've put on, the feud that they've had throughout NXT. It's similar to what potentially the Zarya Sol Ruka stuff is going to be. You have so much to draw on, and I want them to have as much time as possible to tell that story. Maybe people on the main roster who are less familiar with it might need a recap, some video packages here and there. Ricky Saint's recent call-up, I don't expect him to grab the championship. I do enjoy him being in here. I think it adds an element that doesn't just make it a nice straight road to where we were expecting. Could be Carmelo Ricky for the number one contendership at Night of Champions. Could be, as you say, Trick versus Ricky. I do think we will get sort of every combination on our way to SummerSlam for sure.
Yeah. It is really, for the large part, just I think Trick and Carmelo is going to be the next Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn.
Mm-hmm.
They can be friends, but they're always at a drop of the hat from trying to kill each other. I think they're going to be a feud that we're going to watch for 15 years and just see them face each other quite frequently. If you don't want to go with that one, go with Randy Orton versus John Cena.
Yeah. There's always the long running friends to enemies to friends to enemies back to friends storylines, and most of the time they hit. You know, even when you bring them back out of cold storage, it works. I said last week that we didn't get to talk about the Julia Kiana James stuff. I said we'll talk about it this week. I thought maybe we'd get a bit of an advancement on the storyline. We got a slap from out of Julia onto Kiana James, but not a whole lot more than that, I guess. So what are your thoughts on this Julia turning on Kiana? Seemingly, maybe a good put. I don't really know who's coming out of this the face.
I don't know. It just, again, it's another like tag team that they rushed together, and now they're blowing up, and it's like, I don't know. How am I supposed to feel about this?
It's always harder to be emotionally invested, right? Like if this was Motor City Machine Guns or a well-established team who's been together for years going up against each other or splitting, then you're like, oh my God, this is happening. It's just like, you know, these two were paired together for 6 months and now they're not. So I don't know. I just hope that it does wonders for Julia as a Julia fan. I liked her coming into the WWE. She did well in NXT, came to the main roster. To be completely blunt, no connection. I still liked her, but the crowd, very little buy-in from the crowd through her title run, her chasing that title. I noticed it live in Australia when they came down for a live event there. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of crowd noise. Then we switched to Italy and Europe shows, hot as anything. Obviously, the Italian heritage helps on that, but maybe it's something that can transition to the US. I know we've got a couple shows coming up in London and Europe still, but that's really going to be the test for me. You know, she can obviously get the hot European crowd. Can she transition that into a connection to the American crowd?
You want to know one of the secrets why it seems that there's no connection to the crowd in an American crowd or something?
Shoot.
She has no character.
Fair.
What has gotten Danhausen character in spades? The second he actually got to be on the mic, he connected with the crowd. Once they got past the whole crowd, the whole crates situation, and it's because he has an established character. Julia has nothing when it comes to character. Do you know anything about her in WWE outside of her name? I don't.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's why it's easier for me, somebody who watched her through Stardom, and even a little bit in Marigold, where I guess in my brain I'm carrying that character over, where the newer audiences haven't had anything established, like you say, and they need to spend a bit of time, who is Julia, answering that question, and connecting all of those dots, whereas your 2%, 1% of the audience who'd heard of her prior to her appearing in WWE may have something, but they are definitely in the minority.
And so that's where I represent that 98%, is because
Yeah.
I never watched her before she came to WWE. And you have to make me care. I can like your wrestling and stuff, but if I don't care about your character, that's going to put a major ceiling on where I think you can go or what I'll be okay with you doing.
Well, let's see. They're obviously trying to do something with this breakup. We've got a hair color change. We've got a little bit of a style change as well. Maybe there's something there. I'm gonna let it cook, but we'll probably know in a couple months' time if it got burnt in the oven, or I don't know the rest of the metaphor. It's perfectly cooked and great to consume. I don't know. What are we baking? Bread? I'm gonna just move on. AAA Cruiserweight Championship was on the line on WWE TV. Ray Phoenix bringing it over, defending it against Axiom.
Fun match. It was short, but it was fun, and I think there's still plenty of, like, if they want to do this on in AAA where they can give them like 20 minutes, I wouldn't have a problem in the world with that, because Axiom's pretty fun as a wrestler, and Ray Phoenix has been pretty fun. So yeah, I'd be fine with them running it back at some point in AAA. But yeah, they weren't going to change the title after just changing it for any type of shock value, because there wouldn't be any point to it.
Yeah, and I think this can be the tipping point for Ray, right? We talk about his brother and how his ceiling has been utterly smashed. Singles championship could be challenging for world titles, up there. Ray never really got off the starting block per se, but picks up the AAA Cruiserweight Championship, wrestles that AAA style, gets the showcase across the brands. I think it could be the start of maybe where his brother was 12 months ago.
I'm going to,
Yeah.
it's going to be a case of where I'm repeating what I just said. But Ray Phoenix does have a ceiling on him that's much lower than Penta, and it's just solely because you haven't seen the character work that Penta has done. Penta oozes charisma. He doesn't have to do much. He just exists, and you like him, and you want him to do more of what he's doing. Ray has to work at it. And I think this is where one of those things where if he does like in challenge open challenges and stuff on SmackDown for this title, it could give him more segments, more moments to give him a chance to show what he is, and then it could raise his ceiling. But this is his chance to take advantage of that. Otherwise, it's just going to be a case where in a couple of years, when they're needing to do something with Penta because he's coming down from a world title ring, they may just throw him back together with Ray to give us that one tag time title run for the Lucha Brothers.
I agree. I definitely though I do want to see the tag team run, but I do want to see it down the line. I didn't want to see it when they were first called in. I do want them to establish themselves as single stars. As we say, Penta's done that. Ray is starting to do that now. Think there could be a banger tag team run a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line. But let's see. He's also in the oven. Ray Phoenix is in the oven next to Julia. Let's see how it goes. He's getting those spotlight moments because of the championship around his waist. Let's see.
Yeah, that's where Penta benefited from being able to come immediately to WWE, and that's what hurt Ray Phoenix really badly. was having to wait. Because then Penta got established, and then you couldn't put him together with Rey without it seeming like a step down.
Timing. Well, talking about timing, it is roughly halfway through the show, and that means we're going to play our entrance theme this week, and it is the AAA Cruiserweight Champion Rey Fénix's theme playing for you right about now. On Free FM, RFM, and MPR. Is Josh, and on. Oh, I'm Grady, and that is Josh. I'm already thinking about Raw. I'm looking at the rundown of what happened on Raw, and I see like six images of Danhausen's face. This guy all over Raw, trying to get him to take bribes for Nick's winning, losing, that's on SmackDown, trying to take bribes to curse over Femi, trying to get favors from him if you're Liv Morgan. Everybody's knocking on Danhausen's door.
Yep. Danhausen has become a household name, and it's a large part because of stuff that he's done outside of WWE with the whole stuff that had to deal with the New York Knicks. And seemingly uncursing him to winning a championship. I love how people are playing into that whole thing. Because that just makes him bigger. And I love seeing like these little segments of people coming up to Danhausen trying to get him to uncurse them or curse somebody else. And the incredible demand housings that he comes up with on it. Danhausen is, it's getting to a point where it's like, I know I've said multiple times, I don't see him winning a world title, but he's getting over to the point where I could see them like giving him a token reign just to give it to him. But yeah, I'm very happy with the stuff that we get from Danhausen.
Yeah. I think it's definitely interesting. I maintain mid-card championship maybe, but who knows, right? 6 months from now, it could be a completely different landscape. I don't see a Danhausen beating a Roman Reigns or a Cody Rhodes for the championship, but who knows if that is who's holding those titles, you know, in 6, 9, 12 months. So there's definitely options around the bazaars. I am enjoying it. They do keep highlighting he's got that cloning machine behind him. We know it doesn't work 100%, but there's a whole lot of bits and pieces that they can put together, and he can always fill time, right? He can always connect a thread through, like in this case, the King of the Ring and the Judgment Day piece, and connect all those stories.
And there's that whole experiment thing. We don't really know what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping it's the debut of somebody, because I think that will be fun as heck, debuting somebody through Danhausen. In fact, for all we know, it might end up being, he might be reanimating the gingerbread man, and it turns out to be how, because we've all heard rumors of it being Baron Corbin behind the, behind it when he comes back.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be be like a fun way for them to reanimate him, and that's how you would get Baron Corbin back in WWE? As Baron Corbin, not the gingerbread man. But,
yeah, yeah. I apologize on behalf of Australia for injuring him while he was over here on tour. So I haven't kept up on him, but I don't think it was a massive injury. So he could still be, you know, a couple weeks away.
Yeah.
And then we're continuing the Bloodline storyline. We're still possibly thinking Jacob Fatu trying to poison them from the inside. But for now, honestly, he had immediate success if that is his goal. I don't really know what his goal is. I guess to look at the facts, right? Roman Reigns gives a brown Ulafala to Jacob Fatu, and then he kind of becomes like a golem, G-O-L-E-M, where you kind of give a command and he just does it. And if that command is kill Eric Andre, he does it. If that command is go take out LA Knight, he does it. They hinted that there was another command at the end of the night. So be it. We'll see what that one is, but, he is like, as a loose cannon, he's terrifying. As a weapon of Roman Reigns, he is equally terrifying.
Yep. Especially when you consider the color of his Ulafala. That is actually something for very important, because a brown Ulafala gives you a high status and authority as well as respect and honor. So mm-hmm. that is signifying that he is making him his right-hand man.
Yeah.
Which very funny to, which is why I think Jey Uso wins the King of the Ring. I'm sorry. Because I think there's more of a story to it for Jey Uso winning the King of the Ring, beating Cody, and then Roman eventually losing to Oba, whenever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's Jey in the Bloodline that has a gold, while at the same time you have the hired gun of Jacob Fatu, and where we go from there. I think there's a greater, more giant of a storyline, unfortunately, with Jey winning it, than instant satisfaction of Oba.
Yeah, how it all plays together, I think, will definitely become clear once we've had our SmackDown, we've had our King of the Ring finals, and we'll see whether, as you say, whether Oba Femi's is going to be that instant gratification, or whether we're going to be looking further down the line at like a WrestleMania, maybe a Rumble win for him, which we'll talk about in about 3 or 4 episodes when our next pre-record comes out. But I think what was important to see with the LA Knight stuff is Jimmy Uso continues to try and play this like diplomatic role, trying to negotiate, get everybody agreeing. And that's something he always did when Roman Reigns and Jey Uso were beefing, or when Jey and Sammy was beefing. Basically, whenever anybody was beefing, Jimmy tries to kind of talk his way out of it. And Jacob Fatu is like, I ain't listening to you. I don't do what you say. I do what the big man says. Kind of looked like it irked the Usos a little bit. And it feels like they maybe are not agreeing with using the weapon of Jacob Fatu, for lack of a better term.
I mean, it does go back to when Solo brought Jacob in.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of promos that were cut around from the Usos, like, this is not a good idea. We, as a family, decided not to bring him in because we know how dangerous he is. So I do think it goes back to that. And it's just a case of I think it's going to be that the Usos are going to have some serious reckoning to come. And there's going to be a split, and it's just the next stage of the Bloodline.
Yeah, like, there's a very real possibility, and it wasn't to have been on my bingo card, you know, a couple months ago, that maybe Roman Reigns ends up leading the Tongan portion, leaving Solo Sikoa aside, and taking Fatu and however many Tongans still remain in the company, and the Usos got to link up with their brother on the other side, creating a trio. Maybe they're the ones on the outs, and it's the Jacob Fatu and crew with Roman that's sitting at the top of the tree. Different possibilities that the Bloodline storyline can always keep going in. Yeah, we kind of touched on it, but I guess King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring, we know at least two of our finalists, Obafemi coming out on top with his match against Dominic. He did not get cursed. The interferences by McDonough were not enough. And Io Sky coming out on top of her Queen of the Ring finals match as well. Bad day for the Judgment Day.
Yeah, I'm at a point where it's like, yeah, it's Charlotte. Charlotte's winning this.
Yeah, I guess the SmackDown airs when this show airs roughly. Early predictions, right? Your Queen of the Ring, you got Io Sky, Liv Morgan, Charlotte Flair. You picking Charlotte out of those three?
Yeah, I'm picking Charlotte. Because Liv winning doesn't make any sense. And do we really need to see Io Sky versus Liv Morgan again?
Fair enough. And then on the men's side, Obafemi punched his ticket. Jey Uso and Javon Evans going to have their match to see who goes opposite him. You said earlier Jey Uso is your pick out of those three?
Yeah, because I think the story is... Because of Oba winning, I think the story is more about Jey. Also the fact that I don't think Brock Lesnar will allow Obafemi to win this tournament.
Yeah. I think that is the big cloud hovering over it, right?
Yep.
And so if you look at the three competitors from the men's side of things, Javon Evans would love
too
it.
Too soon.
Don't
too
see soon. It happening.
Way too and soon.
Then Oba, you got the Brock Lesnar cloud, kind of is just Jey. And who knows, maybe the extra favor from Jacob Fatu, the extra command is to go to SmackDown and make it an easy match for Jey. Let's put it that way. Maybe that annoys Jey further. He thought he could do it on his own, but Big Cousin Roman sending Jacob to make it easy for him might put that schism a little bit more in there. Alrighty, well, that is pretty much all we have for this week. We're out of time. It's been great talking to you.
Bye, Dee.
You can visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/wrestlingrndup, our Twitter page, twitter.com/wrestlingrndup, our YouTube page, youtube.com/wrestlingrndup, and we will catch you next week.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.